You're listening to another podcast on the Adam Paradox. I am your host. Today I have with me Shannon Allen, who has been all around social media. She is gaining popularity on her YouTube page as well as in the news. She had a recent interview with Tucker Carlson and today is here to tell you her full story of what's going on.
Or whatever. Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's been quite the roller coaster with this company. I'm not going to lie. It started in 2017 when I got a job in Amazon. You know, like I said before, when I first started working at Amazon, I thought it was the most coolest thing ever, you know, because Amazon was getting real popular. I mean, I'm sure it had been popular for a while, but it's really gained popularity in the last several years. And I thought, man, I'm a part of this. You know, I work for this company. I got great benefits. You know, the pay is all right. You know, it could have been a little more. At the time, we were making $12 an hour base pay. And then we had, a dollar shift differential for nights and weekends. So I was making 13 bucks an hour. And I thought, you know, this is awesome, you know, I don't have to drive too far. It was about 30 miles one way, so about 60 miles round trip, but, you know, I was making it. I lived in a little RV park out in Nasal, Texas, and I was comfortable. I had plenty of money to do what I wanted to do and have left, you know, money left over to pay rent and, you know, whatever I wanted, whatever I needed, I had it. But, you know, towards the end of the year in 2017, around September, October, I had went out on medical leave in September because I had my mouth operated on. And so when I went back to work in October, well, you know, I was getting back in the groove of things. They were cutting hours left and right because there wasn't hardly any work and it wasn't peak season yet. So they were letting people go home all the time, you know, that there wasn't any work to do. Like for counters, they only needed like one counter per floor. And a counter is a person who does like inventory control for the items that either come in or go out to customers. So that was my job. And my job consisted of going up and down a ladder for 10 hours a night, squatting, kneeling, stooping, bending, reaching, grabbing, pushing, pulling, lifting things to be able to count everything inside this bin. And this pod is four-sided and it comes to me on a robot, which is called a Kiva robot. And it looks like a Roomba, but it's the size of a car hood.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it moves by itself or through, the internet or wireless, whatever. Well, it moves by itself. And our job is to, of course, count the item. My job was to count the items in the bin. Well, sometimes, you know, items would fall on the floor and we would have to call an ICQA problem solver to come and get the item off the floor because there's tape marked off inside Amazon. And you're talking yellow and black tape, green tape, red tape, all different colors tape. And that tells you where you can and cannot reach, you know, right, or walk.
Yeah. It sounds like it would cut into your times or your races.
Oh, it does. Because if it falls onto the floor, even though it's directly down, like all you got to do is just look down. No, you ain't got to lean over. Just look straight down. And there it is. But we can't pick it up because it fell onto the Kiva floor. So we would have to wait for somebody. We would have to pull what they called an and on. And it's a button that you push on your computer screen. Mm-hmm. And then we would have to wait for somebody to come get that item. Now, if they did not come get that item and you're standing there waiting 5, 10, 15 minutes and they didn't come get that item, then you just bypass that bin, which means that you enter the number incorrectly because you cannot count that item because it's on the floor. So you enter the number incorrectly, which is one less like if one item fell, and then that counts against your quality errors.
Oh, man. Okay, so then, and that's all computerized.
Yeah, it's a catch-22. If they don't come do their job, it's like they're screwing you over because you can't retrieve that item to be able to have perfect quality. So I'm like, you know, this is kind of messed up. I mean, it's almost like we're set up for failure, right off the bat.
So has this been brought up to the supervisors and management and all that? Like, has anyone said, hey, this is like messing us up or?
Oh, many times, many times. There's a board outside of HR and it's called a VOA board. And it's for the employees to write their problems, issues, concerns, complaints, if they have compliments, you know, whatever. It's for them to write whatever they feel needs to be addressed. And that's so that you don't take time out of, you know, working or your break to go to HR to talk to somebody face to face. So HR will come outside of their office whenever they feel like it, and then they will come and answer these questions on this board. And I mean, it's the same repeat questions over and over and over. I mean, from different employees. I mean, when you got 3,500 people that work in a 23-acre warehouse, I would write down these complaints to go back to see if there were, you know, the same complaints. They were pretty much the same complaints, but it wasn't by the same people because you have to sign your name, the date, and the complaint.
Okay.
Just kind of like almost being targeted. It can't be like an anonymous.
Well, that's kind of lame. I think you should be able to do it anonymously.
Oh, right. And, you know, across our computer, our handheld computer, we would get questions regarding management, Amazon, you know, whatever they felt like they needed to ask us on our handheld computer when we logged in with our name because right. We have to scan our badge. And I was like, well, they know who's answering these questions, you know, but I would always be honest, you know, they'd be like, is so-and-so showing good management skills? And I'd be like, no, but they wouldn't give you like a, it was just yes or no.
Oh, and okay. It's a subjective question. There's a lot more that could be specific or not, or to a degree. So yeah, you only get the option of yes or no. And what do they do with that?
They compile it, and I'm assuming that they take this to do evaluations on their managers, maybe who to get rid of, who to coach, who to write up, you know. That's what I'm thinking. But every time they would ask me a question on my computer, I was always honest, but I didn't even know who half these people were because remember in September I told you I was out of work because I had surgery on my mouth.
Right.
Well, they had moved me from B mod to A mod. And so when I came back to work, which they had moved me from one side of the warehouse to the other side of the warehouse. So when I came back to work, I didn't know who any of these people were. I mean, the only person that introduced themselves to me was my direct manager, and he was like the bomb. He was so sweet. He was very understanding, very respectful. And I mean, he was like the best manager I ever had. And I don't know what happened to him because when I went out on medical leave in October, he was gone. I heard that, you know, he had gotten in a disagreement with Amazon and he up and quit.
Oh,
and he
wow.
Had been there several years.
Okay. Do you know what the disagreement was or what it was
I
about?
I do not. I do not. But I got injured. Well, like I said, so things, I don't want to talk about the injury yet. I want to talk about what led up, you know, what happened and everything.
Yeah.
So I started writing down everything, like things that just didn't seem like right to me. Like I would have a manager come up to me and go, where were you at, you know, from 10:30 to 10:40? And I'm just looking at them like, what? Because I didn't understand that they were tracking every minute we were there on their laptop. These managers walk around with laptops. And this is the weird thing. They walk around with these laptops, and it shows all the employees that are clocked in, and it shows their time. It shows how much they scan per hour. It shows if they're not scanning, if there's like a lull, you know, like where they're not doing anything or they can't be tracked, they will come find you and be like, where were you at? Right. And I'm like, well, I went to the bathroom. Okay. I mean, like, we don't have to tell people when we go to the bathroom, but
no, we're adults.
Right.
Yeah.
But they would ask, you know, like I was a kid or something. And I felt humiliated almost. Like they were asking me every time I was not standing there scanning where I was at. And I'm like, I was in the bathroom. Not that it's any of your business. Well, I didn't know that when you took time away from scanning. And I learned all this, and it took me, you know, a good month and a half or so to learn all this. I didn't know that when you walked away from your station, whether you're getting water or you're, you know, going to the restroom, or you have to go speak to your manager about, you know, something that might be in the bin, you know, that you're not sure of, or you have to wait for the ICQA problem solvers to come around or whatever, that lowers your rate. And you have a rate that you have to keep every hour. When I started in Amazon in May of 2017, the rate was 500 units per hour.
Wow.
Yeah, is what I had to count.
That's insane. All right. So what's it at now?
Last I heard, it was 650.
Wow. Okay. So that's every time you have to scan something or count something.
Yes, right. My job was a counter, like I said. So everything in the bin, like it'll say count 1A. So I would have to sit down on my stool or get down on my knees because A is at the very bottom. And I would have to pull everything out of that bin and place it back in there neatly. It's called bin etiquette. And count it as I'm putting it back in and then enter that number. Well, if my machine beeps at me, my handheld machine beeps at me, then I have to take it all back out and recount it because my number is not matching the number they already have. Now, the reason why it might beep is because the stower who put the items in the bin, either their machine told them to, it cannot go in that bin, and they never changed the number of the bin, like they put it in another bin and didn't take it.
Oh, right. I
original number out of the bin. I mean, out of the computer, they just placed it somewhere else. Or
right, and then changed it.
Fell out onto the Kiva floor somewhere in that vast area.
So, how long would this on average take you for each bin or each unit for the rates?
If you want to make rate, you have about 6 seconds to count whatever's in the bin. It could be 10 items.
There's
it could
no
be
way.
150 items.
So what was your average then? I mean, did you make 500?
Oh, yeah, I made rate all the time.
Okay.
But there were times when the robots would break down or the ICQA problem solvers, when they go out onto the Kiva floor, they have to shut the robots down where they won't move. That way they don't get run over.
Yeah, so they have no sensors for, like, people or anything. Yeah, so, okay.
Because, yeah, if something's in their way, they will run right over it.
Dang, that is just, wow. So that counts against you?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, going up and down the ladder, you're not, like, stepping up and down the ladder. You're doing cardio going up and down the ladder just to make this rate.
That's not safe. I mean, you catch your foot and you can fall all the way down.
Yeah, because it's one, two, three steps. It's a three-step ladder that slides from side to side.
So what's like a bad day? Like, what was an average bad day with those rates?
Hardly any work. And you getting pod gaps where a pod, you know, like there's not enough work for all the counters. And so you have pod gaps where you might get 10 pods lined up all at once. And then once those 10 are gone, even though you haven't made rate yet, there could be one item in each pod. So that's only 10 items. Then you have to wait for more stowers to put more items in bins that we get to count. So sometimes there would be pod gaps that would count against us. And I would write that down, pod gap, from 10-10 to 10-12, or, you know, because every minute counts.
Yeah. Wow. Like they're still trying to use humans for what robotics can do calculatively faster.
But yes.
It just seems like unreasonable. Like to expect a human to be able to do all these things so fast, consistently, without error. And so they're holding all that error against you. Not fair at all.
I'm working. And every day you come, okay, every week you come in. Say like if you started out on the fourth floor, mm-hmm. your team started out on the fourth floor. They would pit you against the other floors. Like they want you to work harder and work faster to beat the floor, the floors below you, as far as rate, because if that happens, then I'm not sure, but I can only assume that managers get some kind of kudos for that.
Right. I mean, it doesn't make sense for there to be a competition unless that was the case.
We're not allowed to talk. Our stations are spread so far apart that there is no time for talking, visiting. You're looking straight forward, you know, working. You right. can't listen to the radio in case there's an emergency or the assembly line shuts down. The alarms are really, really loud. So there's no, you can't listen to an iPod or a radio or nothing like that to help pass the time. You are literally just staring straight, counting nonstop.
I imagine you're very in your head all the time, and time starts to kind of feel like it's slowing down. Did you get time to talk to other people and kind of like learn about them, their interests, their families? I mean, was there any personability in the company?
There's no personability in the company, because like when you go out on break, I mean, people, like, you have to walk really, really fast, especially if you're on the fourth floor. You can either go down four flights of stairs and go halfway across this 23-acre warehouse and go out, go through security and then go outside all in 15 minutes and smoke your cigarette or eat or drink or, you know, whatever you do in your 15 minutes. And then everybody rushes back in because it's not 15 minutes or 16 minutes.
It doesn't start when you get there, get out the door kind of thing. It starts.
No, it
when you
sure
leave your
does
station.
Not.
Wow.
It's scan to scan. So, and it took me a minute to, you know, like I said, to realize all these little rules and regulations they had, because say like if I had a problem with my scanner and my battery died, like right as at break time. Like 5 minutes before break or 10 minutes before break, I would have to walk around the floor to where they have the battery terminals at, go find me a battery. This was last in 2017 when they had a battery shortage at our warehouse.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, it was like pulling teeth to even try to find a battery that was even a quarter of the way charged. So you're taking 10 or 15 minutes, sometimes an hour, to try to go find a battery, because you have to walk all four floors all the way around, because it goes all the way around. And it's just like walking around. I mean, one floor is literally like walking around a mall.
They're huge. I mean, and I suppose they probably capped running, so you couldn't run, you know, between your the time you clock out and break or anything like that.
So if I spent 10 minutes looking for a battery before break,
yeah.
Now it looks like my break was 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And well, they want to know where I was at. So I'm like, this system is so flawed. And I mean, they never told us to get a notebook and write everything down. But after they came to me the first couple times, you know, to question my whereabouts, I bought me a notebook and I started writing it down.
do they make the changes in their system that's that kind of compensates for that, so it doesn't affect
the
score?
The manager will come around with his laptop.
Okay.
And he'll ask me, I'm going to give you an example that happened to me. The manager came around and he's like, my first name is Vicky, and that's what's on my name badge. So, you know, that's why you might see some articles that say Vicky Shannon Allen, because even though I go by Shannon, they put Vicky on my name badge. So the manager came around and he says, hey, Vicky, I need to see your notebook. I need to know where you were at from this time to this time and this time to this time. And I said, and I stopped what I was doing and I looked at him and I said, first off, you don't come over here demanding my notebook. That's my notebook, my personal notebook. I bought and paid for that with my money. Right. Now, if you need to, you know, code some time for me, I can look in my book and I can tell you where I was at, but you're not going to read through my notebook, because I also wrote personal notes in there, you know, of things that I saw or things that I, you know, like witnessed or heard or whatever. And I didn't want people reading that. And that notebook never left my side. So he said, well, if I don't get to see your notebook, then I'm just going to have to not code your time, and then I'm going to write you up for termination. And I logged off my computer, put my chain up, because there's chains that go across these stations. I said, come on, we're going to go down to HR. I said, you're not going to threaten my job just because I won't let you see my personal notebook. So we went down to HR, and they coded all of my time because I had it all wrote down. And and I asked the manager, I mean, I asked the HR rep, I said, hey, can I ask him some questions? And she said, yeah, go ahead. And I looked at him and I said, I want to know what time you went to the bathroom today and how long you were in there. And she just looked at me like her eyes were like bugged out. And I said, now, you see how stupid that is, asking a 50-year-old woman when she went to the bathroom and how long she was in there?
Yeah, it takes away human dignity. And just because you're a supervisor or whatever, like you're trying to log your thing, doesn't mean you get to push around other people when, I mean, and that's just common sense. It's like, it's like the position went to his head.
Yeah, almost definitely. Yeah. And the big thing is there is hydrate. And
they that sounds like the army.
Yes. They have like little water stations, you know, like those, what do you call those little bottled water things, you know, that you flip upside down?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, those. They have those, you know, like two on each side of the floor on every floor.
Right.
Not end to end, but two on each side long ways. So anyway, you know, if you're hydrating constantly, if you're drinking a lot of water, then guess what? It's got to go somewhere. So you have to go to the bathroom many, many times. And in all actuality, it was kind of an unwritten rule that you can go to the bathroom on your 15-minute break, you can go to the bathroom on your 30-minute break, and you can go to the bathroom on your last 15-minute break. And then you are allowed to go to the bathroom two other times throughout your shift without it counting against you. But anything excessively more than that, they will give you a verbal warning.
Wow. You know, I mean, not everybody has the health or ability to only go on those scheduled times, especially if you're drinking a lot of water. Now, did you witness anybody passing out from dehydration or anything?
I've witnessed people getting sick from dehydration, just not necessarily passing out, but just, you know, sitting down for a minute, getting dizzy. Yeah. And, you know, you asked me earlier about breaks and what people talk about on their breaks. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, they damn sure don't talk about their family or their dog or their husband or wife or kids or they don't talk about any of that. The only thing they talk about is their job and, you know, the complaints that they have and how it's unfair and how there's a lot of favoritism. Because if you're not a favorite, which, you know, I believe in equality for the working class, of course. What matters to me is when they show favoritism to people who are not doing as well as others. Because I saw people in there busting their butt, and the people who get to fluff off are the ones that kept winning all the, I call it monopoly money, but it's called Bezos. It's called swag bucks. And it's like fake money, looks just like monopoly money. Wow, and you can buy things with it inside Amazon. You know, when I say buy things, they have overpriced food in their cafeteria that gets brought in by a vendor. Or you can use those little bucks to buy merchandise in like this glass case that they have set outside of HR. And you can buy like pins, like, you know, lapel pins, lanyards, sweatshirts, t-shirts, ball caps, water bottles, stuff like that. And the same people were winning constantly. And me and a couple people that I got hired with, we noticed that. And they only recognize pickers and stowers for these benefits, you know, the gift cards, which were Amazon gift cards, or these swag bucks. So I raised my hand and I asked the manager, I said, excuse me. And he's like, yeah. I was like, how come y'all never do anything for the counters? I was like, you always do for the pickers and stowers, but you don't do anything for the counters. And there's 10 of us counters right here on your team. And, you know, we make rate. You know, we help make this world go round in here. You know, how come we don't get anything? And I swear to God to you, and I probably still have the letter. The very next day, my boss announced in our, you know, stand-up meeting before work that I had won first place for a gift card. And I was like, you gotta be shitting me.
How much was that for?
The very next day, he said, I'm gonna go get you a $30 gift card. And this was on a Tuesday, okay?
Oh, right, okay.
And my shift was Saturday through Tuesday. So I'm like, okay, well, I can't pick it up till, you know, I come back to work because, you know, we're not gonna be here tomorrow night. And he's like, okay. So that following Saturday, when I came back to work, he handed me my gift card. And I didn't open it or anything. I just put it in my bag because we have little lunch bags, you know, that they gave us, clear lunch bags in case, you know, they could catch somebody stealing or whatever. But they gave us clear lunch bags. And I put it in my bag and I looked at it when I got home the next morning and it was only a $15 gift card to Amazon.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he made a show and a spectacle of it, basically trying to almost in a way like pressure you or inadvertently say like don't say anything more. Is that kind of what happened?
I felt like he was trying to shut me up because nobody won. No, not one counter won anything after that. No gift cards, no swag bucks, no nothing.
You know, you hear these things and this is the kind of story that people go, there's no way that could have possibly happened. Like perhaps you're seeing it wrong or it just didn't happen that way. Or maybe he had a good intention and there was a mistake that happened. But it's like I've heard these stories before numerous times and it's like public shaming almost. Mm-hmm. And because you know what's going on, a few other people know what's going on. They make an example out of you. And
oh, yeah.
And then you're sitting there going, okay, did I really deserve this because I just brought up and he didn't notice? Or to make a public example of you. And I think that's terribly wrong.
Right. I mean, because I'm not saying that I was the best counter on my team, but evidently I was doing something right to have kept my job. Because if you don't make rate, they fire you.
Yeah. You get, you get like three strikes or something and then you're gone.
Yeah, it's really not even that. I mean, of course, you know, Texas is a right to work state, so they can just fire you without notice or cause and just be like toodaloo. But the illusion that you get three write-ups is just that. It's an illusion.
So you don't actually get three write-ups. It's whatever they build against you.
Yeah. Like
you can know about it or not.
You can know about it or not. You said it. because this is the thing about the write-ups. When the manager walks around with their laptop, they can go in and they can code your time. It's like a little, it's almost like a spreadsheet style program that they do this on, and it's color coded. They can go in and color code your time. They physically enter that into their laptop by a color code, and they can move that slider bar up and down. Now, I don't know if they can actually change your rate. Say, like, if me and the counters, the girls that I got hired with, or the people that I got hired with, it wasn't just girls, but the people that I got hired with, I mean, you could see them dropping like flies. I mean, they were there 1 week and gone the next, you know, and I mean, every week it was, you know, everybody that I had gotten hired with was gone, 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 because they couldn't make rate. And this one girl that I worked with, her and I, you know, became friends, and we were like, they would post our rates, you know, it's on one sheet of paper, the pickers, the stowers, the counters, they would post them up on this board where everybody could see it. And you could see how many rates per hour you were counting, and how many, if you left early, it shows on there, like if you left work early and your rate was posted the next day. I mean, there's like no privacy when it comes to your personal job, you know, because everybody can see it. Everybody knows what those numbers mean.
Kind of like who's doing better than who then.
Right. And they used to, you know, post on these clipboards all around Amazon at the HR kiosk how many people had been fired.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it's just a number. It's a number. Oh, okay. And it says this many people have been fired. And I started in May. So for 5 months previous, it was like 891 people had been fired for negative UPP.
In one warehouse, or?
Yes, at my warehouse.
Wow. That's a huge turnaround. Like, I can't imagine that's cheap.
Yeah, that's why they have those mass hiring events. And now, you know, Amazon started going through all these temp services to hire people. So I was a blue badge employee, which means I was permanent. I was hired directly into Amazon by Amazon. I didn't go through a temp service or nothing like that. The temps that come in, they're white badge. They right. have no benefits, no stocks, no nothing. But they get paid. They were getting paid more than we were getting paid. Like, our base pay was $12 an hour. Theirs was like $14 because they didn't receive any benefits.
Well, that still doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, you should still be getting paid. Right. A pretty high rate considering how physical the job sounds like and demanding. Did you know it was going to be this demanding going in?
I did not. I'd never worked in a warehouse ever in my whole life. And
I've worked in one warehouse, and I mean, they're very strict on their times. Cause like, if you go take a break, then someone else is, you know, everything just slows down. It's like a ripple effect. But I was building trunks, you know, like Foot Locker trunks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I went and took a break, it could slow down the production of someone else's job. And that was the only reason why we couldn't just go take breaks all the time. So it was really only if you had to and you kind of just rushed it. Didn't really matter otherwise. But it, what you're describing sounds even more intense than what I was doing. And mine was just repetitive work, you know, putting this in the machine, right. pulling it out, counting it, whatever. Yeah, I mean, the manufacturing work isn't really a bad gig, but from what I'm hearing, it sounds like this is just beyond what human capability is.
The human body is not meant to do 10 hours of cardio 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week, or 6 nights a week during season. It's just not. I mean, you will drop dead, which, you know, that did happen to Mike Galesh in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. He dropped dead.
What?
Yeah.
So someone's actually died from this work.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, right there on the job. And when somebody finally found the hem, because, you know, I told you they spread us so far apart. There's no talking. And if there's not a lot of workers, you know, like, you know, people didn't show up for work or, you know, they VTO'd people, which is voluntary time off. You know, you might see one person and then four stations down the way, you'll see another person. And then four more stations down the way, you'll see another person. Like, they spread us out. So there's no telling how long he was laying there, you know, dying or dead. So what happened was, is somebody found him. They tried to get a hold of him. They had to find a manager first, because we're not allowed to have our cell phones inside the building at all. So they had to find a manager first, which that in itself is absurd to do, because they're usually all gathered at the quarterback desk, which is a desk for managers, and they're usually just standing there BSing. So somebody had to find a manager first. Well, when they finally did find a manager, they tried to radio for help down at security, and the radio wasn't working, ironically. So they finally went down to security. Security called 911. They put 911 on hold for more than 5 minutes and then hung up on them.
What?
Yes.
Why? Okay, so why did they do that?
Well, from my experience at my Amazon that I worked at DFW7, the security personnel, most of them, do not speak clear English.
Oh, interesting.
So I do not know if there was a language gap or barrier or what was wrong. And this is the thing. And I had intended on going back to work after my injury. But this is the thing. They have defibrillators right there at the elevator. And now, I don't know if it's on every floor or if it's every other floor.
Right.
But I wanted to know, because, and I was going to ask this, you know, whenever I went back to work, whenever they have their all hands meeting, I was going to ask which one of these managers are trained to use this defibrillator. Because if somebody is going into cardiac arrest or having a heart attack, I mean, you're already, if you are the person that's applying the care, are you going to be thinking clearly enough to read these instructions on how to work this defibrillator? Because as it stands right now, I personally do not know how to use one.
Right.
Did any of the other employees know how to use one, or did they know to go get it?
There's a lot of people that probably don't, but I had to learn to use those during my CPR training. So No one used it. No one tried to perform any type of CPR on him until emergency services arrived.
Well, I'm not sure of the particulars about it, but I think he was DOA. I think, you know, he died at Amazon and, you know, they did come pick him up. Well, this is what happened from what I know, you know, personally about the story. The employees at this Murfreesboro, Tennessee Amazon,
mm-hmm,
kept waiting to see it in the paper, hear about it. I mean, the employees didn't even know how, you know, of course the employees don't even know. I mean, they don't talk to each other, but I mean, you would think that they would have a meeting saying, hey, we lost one of our people, you know, our comrade, our workers, whatever, you know, they call us. And no, everything is so hush hush at Amazon, especially over something like this. So what happened is the workers, they waited like a month or so to see if they would see it in the paper or anything. Nothing. They called the news station.
Right.
And then their local news station, and then their local news station investigated it and did a story on it. But that's as far as it went. And then the World Socialist website wrote a story about it. Mm. And what gets me is, out of all the people that's died at Amazon, You have two people up where in, I think it was in New Jersey, that died when a wall fell on them from a tornado.
Oh, what? So they were working and there was a tornado?
They were working. Amazon did not warn these people that there was inclement weather outside or possible tornado warnings. They didn't warn these employees. I mean, because, you know, the smart thing would do was to sound some type of alarm or have some type of loudspeaker system, which I've never heard either inside Amazon, except for when the assembly line stops.
Do you think it was just ignorance? Like, tornadoes touch all the time, but we have impervious walls, so we don't need to worry about it. Or do you think they just didn't know protocol?
I just don't think that they knew protocol. Because surely as much as they sit at their computers and their desk and never walk out inside into the warehouse, they knew, because there's no windows in this warehouse. I mean, you cannot see outside. So we, being inside Amazon, it could be raining meteors and we wouldn't know.
They don't put anything
off track here, but this is kind of like the oh my God moment. Like, it's almost so unbelievable.
Yeah, I didn't hear about this. I'm in shock right now because that's just insane. So, and it was it reported that all these people died were injured in that warehouse and where the wall fell?
I read it, you know, the same place I always get all my news, because, you know, they've done stories about me and I know what they say is the truth, which is, you know, and I've introduced a lot more employees to the World Socialist website who's also had their stories printed, and everything they speak is the truth, because I've talked to these people and continue to talk to these people. These people are my friends now, because we all share this kind of kinship, you know, of what happened to us and the struggles of working at Amazon and being injured.
Well, here's a follow-up question. Do you think that they hire particular people to be managers? Like, why do you think there's a disconnect in management to employee?
Well, you will see a lot of, I'm 50 years old, you will see a lot of people my age doing a lot of the work, physical work, and you will see a lot of, I call them kids because to me they are,
right,
20 something year olds who are managers. And I'm looking, I'm thinking something is wrong with this picture. Because, I mean, these kids, as I call them, they have no experience, you know, social skills. They don't know how to talk to adults. They talk to them like they're talking to one of their buddies who's their same age. There's no respect. And it's just like, these things are going through your mind and you're like, okay, I've been alive twice as long as she has.
Right.
And she's my manager because she has a 2-year degree in fashion.
I could see where that would be really frustrating.
Yeah.
It's not like you have the job on merit any more than you would. So it's like, why didn't you get the opportunity? And not only that, but you have
experience,
developed skills from previous work and jobs and stuff. So these managers are basically kids and they don't have much connection. It seems like it's like they hired human drones. Is that fair to say?
Somebody that they can train because they're young and impressionable.
You know, they say the age of reason, or at least when you start considering your future, outside inward perspective, typically happens when the brain matures around 25 years old. So, I mean, if you got somebody who's, you know, like you said, 20 to 25 or something, they haven't fully figured out that they have to behave and do a certain, live a certain way in order for the future of their life to work out successfully.
Right. And then, like I said, you know, the favoritism, they pick favorites who are around their age, somebody they can laugh and joke with, yeah. hang out with, text with, or whatever. It's not like, you know, the 22-year-old boss and the 50-year-old worker are buddies. And the 22-year-old worker who's around their same age, cute, not cute, you know, whatever the situation is.
Yeah, they're going to be around people that they feel comfortable with and give them enough popularity to maintain their job and position, but not enough to ruin them either. We discussed the kind of the employee and management position, and gosh, so terrible about the wall that fell. So what led up to your injury? When did that happen, and how did it happen?
Well, I went to work on October the 24th, 2017, like any other day. It was about 10:30 at night. I start work at 6:30 in the evening. It was about 10:30 at night. And the station that I was at was missing the brush guard. And the brush guard actually is supposed to stop items from falling onto the Kiva floor. So okay. with that brush guard not being there, it left a huge gap, probably about 6 to 8 inches.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, and it's a drop off, and it's a drop off maybe about 3 feet.
Yeah, it's easy. That's, you know, wide enough for your foot to fall in, or even up, you know, your whole leg.
Right.
Yeah.
Now the brush guard doesn't stop, you know, me from, you know, falling either. Right. If that was the case, but subconsciously, you know that the brush guard is there, and you know, like you could prop your foot up on it while you're counting, and it does stop items from falling onto the Kiva floor because it's a double-sided brush guard, like on each side, you know, with a metal bar down the middle. So anyway, my station was missing the brush guard.
And do you know why it was missing? Was there?
I do not know why it was missing. I of course, nobody ever told me or explained to me why it didn't have one. Okay. Well, this is what happened. I was like, we have yellow totes inside the warehouse where all the items go, you know, for pickers and stowers. And so anyway, I took one of the yellow totes and I put it between my legs long ways. And that way things would not fall onto the Kiva floor, because when you're reaching into the bin, you might get, let's say, 100 gift cards. And, you know, they're not all stacked up, just the cards alone. They have those cardboard pieces around the gift cards. So when you reach in to grab the gift cards, they will slip out of your hand if you don't have a good grip on them, you know, because it's uneven. I didn't want any of my stuff falling onto the Kiva floor because I wanted to make weight, and I didn't want to have to wait on ICQA to come get the stuff off the floor. So I put a tote in between my legs to make up for that brush guard not being there. Well, when I did that, I was reaching into a bin over the tote while I was sitting down. And when I did that, it felt like, and I was doing it with my right hand, it felt like, and the only way I can describe the pain is as if somebody stabbed me at the bottom of my neck and drug a knife all the way down beside my spine. The pain was so intense. I almost saw stars. It was like you see the little sparkly things in your eyes. That's what it was like. So I sat there for a minute and I was like, oh shit, what was that? And I sat straight up because my back was just killing me. And I was like, man. And I thought, man, I better hurry up and get this bin counted, because, you know, you only get 6 to 10 seconds if you're going to make weight. So I tried to continue counting that bin, and that pain just shot down my back again. I was like, oh, I can't do this. So I stood up and I looked over to the right. The next station down, there was like a little manager's desk there, and there was an acting manager standing there. I said, hey, I just pulled my back out. And she said, okay, well, hold on a minute. Let me call your AM and get him over here. And I was like, okay. So she called him and he came over there immediately. I told him what happened. And by this time, I couldn't stand up straight. Like I could feel my, you know, bending at the waist a little bit because it hurt so bad. So he locked up my station for me and grabbed my lunch bag. And we walked slowly to the elevator because we were on the third floor. And we went down the elevator, walked all the way around the one of the robot floors and down to the middle of the warehouse where AmCare is at. And AmCare is like their little triage area where they have EMTs in there that assess, you know, minor injuries or put a Band-Aid on you.
They don't have anybody that can quickly respond to a station if like an emergency button is pressed or anything? Like,
no.
You know, you'd think they'd have that in a warehouse and have like a stretcher and like all these things that they could quickly assist you with.
No, they don't have nothing like that.
Huh.
No. So anyway, no wheelchair, no nothing either.
Okay,
which I really could have used one that day. I really could have because it literally just killed me walking.
And if you're injured, how do you get around anywhere? So what happened when you got down there?
So my manager went up to the window and told him that I hurt my back. And they let me through the door and they let me sit on a heating pad for 15 minutes. Which the pain, like I said, was from my neck down to the bottom of my spine, but on the right side of my spine. It wasn't my spine. It was to the right side of my spine, that big muscle in your back.
Yep.
I sat on the heating pad for 15 minutes, and then they VTO'd me and sent me home without pay.
So can they do that?
Well, I've never been injured at work. So I didn't know what to do. I've never filed for workers' comp before. Didn't even know what it was for 3 weeks. I would come into work. I would go to stand up. I would clock in. I would go to stand up. They would send me to AmCare to sit on the heating pad for 15 minutes. And I was VTO'd. Because by the time I got done with AmCare, they had already given all the stations out. So by the time I went back up to the floor, there was no stations left for me to work. So they sent me home every day for 3 weeks. That's when I really started falling behind financially because I'm driving 60 miles round trip. I drive a car that's 21 years old and it's a V8. So it was costing me in gas, of course, major bucks. Because they didn't always offer VTO on our little employment hub where we could just say, hey, I'm taking VTO today and not even have to get out of the house. I would have to go into work every day for them to VTO me because like I said, they sent me down to AmCare every day to sit on the heating pad. Well, then the sports therapy guy inside Amazon wanted me to get on the floor. No lie. He wanted me to get on the floor and roll on this big old pillow type thing to try to stretch my back out. And I couldn't do it. He wanted me to roll a tennis ball behind my back up against the wall. And that wasn't helping. As a matter of fact, it hurt like hell.
Yeah, those are only good to massage like a muscle in the back or in between the spine. It's not actually designed to help like with any spinal issues or anything that's physical.
Yeah, they didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. Like I said, they didn't examine me. They didn't put their hands on me. They asked me a couple questions and I told them what happened and boom, that was it. They didn't know what was wrong with me. They're not doctors. They didn't examine me. They can't touch me because they just can't. You know, they're EMTs.
Right. So when did you finally get to a doctor?
On November the 11th, this was October 24th when I got injured. On November the 11th, I went to work and my back was killing me. I couldn't stand up straight. I mean, I was walking bent over. It just hurt so bad. And I asked the manager when I got back from my heating pad, I said, hey, can you just go ahead and VTO me? I'm really not feeling good today. I took some medicine before I came up here. and it's not working, which, you know, at the time I only had over-the-counter medicine. And I said, I just don't feel good. My back is really hurting. And she was like, no, we're not VTOing tonight. I said, well, you VTO'd everybody else. I said that were counters. She goes, well, we're not at 100% capacity, so we're not going to VTO you. And I turned around and looked at her, and I said, well, we'll see about that. I said, I'm going to AmCare. So I went down to AmCare, and I walked in there, and I said, I want my workers' comp paperwork, and I want it in 5 minutes. And he just looked at me like his eyes were bugged out. And I said, you never told me about workers' comp. You never told me I could go to the doctor. And I've been suffering like this for 3 weeks while y'all minimized whatever injury is wrong with my back. I said, so I want my paperwork so I can go to the doctor and find out what's wrong with my back. Well, he got on the phone and started calling HR, and he called my manager down there. And then he called, you know, the floor manager down there. I'm talking, it was like a big whoop to do.
Right. It almost became a show now.
Because I said the dirty words, workers' yeah. comp.
I don't know why a big company would have such an issue with it. I mean, you would think being so big, they'd just be like, yeah, just pay it out, take care of everybody. We know it's a stressful job. Or
so anyway, the managers came down, senior ops came down, and he's like, what's going on, Vicky? What's happened? And I said, well, first off, I don't appreciate the way that your manager up there on the floor was talking to me. I said, she knows that I'm under AmCare care because I injured my back here, you know, 2.5-3 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden today, she doesn't want to let me go home. I said, and then on top of that, I said, these people in here never told me about workers' compensation for my back injury. And I said, I want my paperwork. I need to go to the doctor. Something is wrong with my back. I mean, it's been 3 weeks and I still have this pain in my back that's not going away. Something is wrong with it. And he said, okay, anything you want, like that. And so they gave me my paperwork. They took me in a room with my manager, and the HR representative is the one who wrote up my statement, which I have never seen. I did not write the statement up. The HR was typing it on her computer as I was telling her how I got injured. So I'm like, you know, I'm just telling her, you know, what happened, the same thing I told you already. And they gave me my paperwork. That was on November the 11th. And then on November the 12th, the next day, I went to the doctor and got, you know, was seen by a doctor. And the doctor told me that it was a 6-week injury. Well, I'm already 3 weeks into my injury. So I thought, this is kind of fishy, kind of weird. You know, that he's saying that I have a six-week injury. I'm 3 weeks into it.
Right. It's almost like trying to say that you had long enough to recover, even though you didn't.
Right.
3 weeks. That's hardly any time at all.
Right. So they wrote me some prescriptions for some pain pills and muscle relaxers and some steroids. And I was put off work. Well, the first 7 days that you're off work, you don't get paid. Not by Amazon, not by workers' comp. That's kind of like their gimme period, you know, for you to go to the doctor to see if you're really injured and what it's going to entail. So the first 7 days, you don't get any pay. Well, I was already without pay for 3 weeks previous to that because they VTO'd me every day except for that last day. I mean, they did eventually, but I was VTO'd every day. So you're talking, you know, an hour every day for 3 weeks is what, 8 hours a week, every 2 weeks?
Right.
That's what I was getting. So I was like, okay, this is not good. I started falling behind in my rent. Well, then, you know, they had to file the paperwork with workers' comp, and then that took a couple more weeks to get the paperwork all put in and everything. And then when they paid me, they only paid me like for the first week. So I tried to divvy up that money as best I could, which was, it was only like a couple hundred bucks. So I paid a little on rent. I'd already explained everything to my landlady. I paid a little on rent, paid my car insurance, bought me a few little groceries, you know, at the Dollar General store, like $20 worth, put gas in my car, and boom, it was gone. I mean, then they were paying me $211 a week between paying rent, electricity, gas for my RV trailer, gas for my car insurance, my phone bill, groceries, toiletries, you know, stuff like that. That $211 a week was just not cutting it. And like I said, I was out the month of September. That they go back, you only get 60% of your base pay the 13 weeks prior to your injury. Well, the month of September, I was out because, you know, I had that surgery on my mouth. And they were counting those 4 weeks in with my workers' compensation as part of my compensation. And I said, you can't do that. I was on medical leave. So you need to go back 4 more previous weeks than September. You know, so they did. And then my payment went up from 211 to 246.
That doesn't even seem like an accurate calculation in the error.
Right.
It just goes up like $30. It just seems like a lot of trouble for such a little return. So what? OK, so how long did it take before you had to move out of your RV and everything?
Well, this is the thing between Amazon. And when I say Amazon, they were physically demanding me to bring papers to them every time I went to the doctor or every time something needed to be signed or whatever. So I'm driving 30 miles there, 30 miles back, going to the doctor, which was 18 miles away, 18 miles home in the opposite direction of Amazon. And then they immediately put me into physical therapy without having an MRI or anything done on my back. And that was 29 miles away. And they only pay you mileage reimbursement if it's only 30 miles or more away, one way, not 30 miles round trip, one way. So they're running me ragged going to all these doctor's appointments and running up to Amazon, and I'm spending all of my money in gas. I sold everything I had I pawned stuff. I pawned my grandma's earrings.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. They wouldn't take a scan, a screenshot. They wouldn't take a photo, anything else.
Yeah, and then being on the phone with them constantly, because Amazon doesn't deal, even though they have a workers' comp manager, they outsource their leave to another team, which is called the leave of absence team, which is called the Reed Group.
Oh, so they're probably outsourcing management, and they're probably outsourcing other resources in their warehouses.
Yeah, and their workers' comp is Sedgwick.
Oh, I'm familiar with Sedgwick.
Okay. Oh, yeah. People are learning how crooked these people are.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about Sedgwick.
So, I mean, I'm being run ragged, having to go up to the library and fax papers and go to the doctor. And, I mean, it was just every day I mentally did not have time to get well, and I physically did not have time to get well because I spent most of my time in my car driving around. So I would give the landlady, you know, $50 one week, right, and nothing the next week, and then maybe $100 the next week, and then nothing for like a couple more weeks. I was doing the best I could, you know. And so finally she called me on the phone. And I think I still had the recording on my phone. And she said, look, we need to do something. You know, you've been very diligent about keeping me up to date, what's going on with your workers' comp and everything, but you're really falling behind on your rent. And, you know, we're paying your electric bill and your gas because you're not giving me enough money throughout the month to even cover that. And I'm like, well, I'm doing the best that I can. You know, I was like, I give y'all something at least, even if it's 20, 25, 50 bucks, I give y'all something to show you that I'm trying and I haven't hid nothing from you. You have copies of all my papers from the doctor where it shows I was off work for another month or I'm going to physical therapy or whatever. Well, when I finished physical therapy in January of 2018, the doctor released me to go back to work. Now, this is before the MRI, before the state exam. So a couple months after my injury, they had me in physical therapy and my back felt a little better because, you know, the physical therapist would let me lay on this warm heating blanket pad thing for like 15, 20 minutes, which loosened up my muscle in my back. And then she would massage my back for like another 15 or 20 minutes. So my back felt pretty decent, like where I could stand up and, you know, not be in as much pain, but my neck was still hurting, but they omitted that injury from the workers' comp. So it was never even acknowledged as part of my injury. So the only thing they were focusing on was that one small piece in the middle of my back. That muscle right next to, you know, your spine. I don't know right. if it's your shoulder muscle or whatever it's called, lumbar.
Okay, yep.
So, like I said, that part felt better, but my neck, I couldn't hardly turn my neck to the right mm-hmm. or my head to the right. And it always felt like there was a knot or something, not that you could physically see it, but like there was a bulge almost, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. So I went back to work in January the 27th, and they put me back on that same broke ass station.
So they never replaced the brush.
Oh no, they did not.
And what did you bring that back up to them?
I reported this station 9 times.
No correction was ever made.
None. And that's why, you know, when I was on Tucker Carlson the other night, that's why I called out Dave Clark. Because if you watch the NBC interview that I did, he stated at the end of the interview that once they found out the station was missing a piece of safety equipment, that they had it fixed immediately. And that's why I called him out on that, because, you know, I posted on his Twitter page that he was a liar, you know, that he lied to NBC. I told the reporter afterwards when I saw that he was a liar, that they never fixed the station. Otherwise, I would not have re-injured myself. And so anyway, I kept reporting it. I mean, I saw a maintenance guy walking on the first floor and I said, hey, look, can I ask you a question? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I was like, there's a station up on the third floor that's broke and it's been broke since I was injured. And he said, what's wrong with it? I said, it's missing the brush guard. And he goes, well, I don't understand how you got injured just from it missing a brush. I said, never mind.
So it's probably been talked about. And he's already kind of like developed an opinion about it. Kind of walk me through again what happened. Like, so the brush guard's missing, and how did the machine hit your back?
Well, nothing hit me. Pulling that muscle by overextending.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that makes more sense.
It pulled that muscle in my back, like it stretched it. Like, I'm telling you, the pain was just unbearable. So I re-injured my back. I went back down to AmCare and I said, look, I said, my back is still killing me. They put me on the same broke station and I want to speak to somebody in safety.
Right.
Before I go back out on medical leave. So they took me into a conference room and it was me, my 3 managers, which were men, and the safety manager, which was a man. They sat across from me and I said, I want to know what your job is here at this facility. And he just looked at me like, excuse me, you know, like that's how I felt by the look he gave me. It was like, why is she asking me this? And who does she think she is? That's kind of how I felt. And I said, I want to know what your job is. I mean, do you ever leave your office and go out onto the floor and look to see if things need to be fixed around here? Are you in touch with AmCare when an employee gets hurt on a piece of equipment? And he said, no. I said, you're not in touch. You and AmCare don't communicate when an employee gets injured because a station is missing a piece of safety equipment that needs to be fixed. And he said, no. And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, maybe if you got up out of your little air-conditioned office and actually walked around this facility, you would see that there's a lot of things that need to be fixed. Half of the fans don't work. The water fountains don't work sometimes. I said, these stations here are missing a brush guard. And there was three of them, 3113, 3108, and 3105, all in a row that didn't have brush guards on them. I said, how come? And he said, I don't know, but I'll look into it. And I said, I was injured October 24th, and this is January 27th. And I'm going back out on medical leave again.
So the issue was you were basically changing the way that you moved in order to compensate for that brush guard missing, right?
Right.
And it
which
caused,
I should not have been doing.
Right, because it caused a strain and then that caused the injury. So, yeah, they're technically still held liable for I mean, I'm not like a legal expert or anything, but I would venture to say that that seems reasonable. That they are not making sure that everything's in place so you don't injure yourself. Whether or not it was the piece itself, the brush guard, it's still, you know, how you operate in the workplace. And if it goes against kind of like what is natural for, I guess, people to physically do the job, then...
And do it correctly. Because if we mess up through fault of our own, we're going to get fired because we didn't follow safety protocol.
Right. And that's the thing. It's not even your fault for that because they don't have the things in place for you to perform safely. And that's what OSHA kind of puts in place. You know, things have to be a certain way so that you can operate a certain way. And it sounds like that's not what you had available. So, yeah, I think they owe you.
Well, this went on. I was back out on medical leave. And then April the 18th, I was having a hard time with my adjuster at Sedgwick. Like, they talk to you like they're on your side because he was giving me advice kind of like what to do, what to say, you know, to the doctor, what papers needed to be filled out. So I thought, I mean, like I said, I never collected workers' compensation before. I didn't even know anything about it. And so I thought, okay, this guy's trying to help me to where I can get better and get the money that I need to be able to pay my rent and stuff like that. Well, of course I didn't know that they were against me. So, April the 18th, Amazon called me and said, hey, can you come in? We want to have a meeting with you. And I said, okay. And they said, so I drove all the way to Amazon and I said, went in there, had the meeting with them. They said, look, you've been released to come back to work, but we really don't know what to do with you. Your restrictions aren't very clear because my restrictions at the time said no stooping or bending, but that was it. It didn't say anything about pushing, pulling, reaching, grabbing, sitting, squatting, you know, any of that. And right. I said, well, I'll just run over to the doctor and I will get them to clarify this. And then I will fax this back to you because I don't have the gas to drive all the way back over here. I mean, that was like 40 miles.
Right.
And so anyway, she's like, okay, that's fine. So I left there and I went to the doctor. And when I walked in there, I said, hi, I've been on medical leave and Amazon doesn't know what to do with me. They don't know whether to put me back at work or keep me off work. And I just need some clarifications on my restrictions. And she goes, well, we just can't fill that out. You're going to have to be seen by a doctor. And I was like, okay. I was like, it's under workers' comp. And so I went into the room. Well, I waited about 15 minutes and they called me and I went into the room and I waited about another 30 minutes inside the room. The doctor came in.
Yep.
And she sat down and she put her hands between her legs and she just kind of cocked her head a little bit. And she says, now what's wrong with you? And wow. I was sitting on the table and I was like, well, Amazon needs an updated restrictions, you know, so they know whether to send me back to work or not. And the doctor didn't make it real clear on the last one that I got just a few days ago. And she says, okay, well, I need for you to get up and walk across the floor. And I said, okay. So it took me a second to get down off of the table. And I had, you know, because I had to use the stool to even get up on the table. But it took me a second to get down because, like I said, my back was just killing me.
Right.
And they hadn't even done anything, you know, as far as I went to the physical therapy. But as far as the doctors feeling on my back, touching on my back, even looking at my back through clothes or in a gown, they didn't do any of that. So
no scans, no nothing.
No nothing.
Are these personal doctors or were these ones by Amazon doctors?
So I got up off the table and I stood there for a second because, like I said, my back was hurting. And then I walked from the table to the door, which was only about 3 steps, and I walked back. And then she goes, okay, I need for you to bend over and touch your toes. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And she just looked at me and she goes, okay, well, I'm trying to assess your back injury. I said, and you're trying to ask me to do things that I cannot do. I said, I am in pain right now. And you're asking me to be in more pain by reaching over and touching my toes. And she goes, okay, well, I need for you to twist from side to side. I said, no, I cannot do that. I'm not going to do that. I said,
right.
I'll tell you what, if you would have had my file right in front of me, you would have known that I had a back injury. I said, but you came in here empty handed with nothing. You don't even know what's wrong with me. You don't even know my name. And she excused herself and walked out. And about 15 minutes later, she came back with an office personnel lady who was in scrubs. So I assumed that maybe she was an assistant or something like that. And this lady had my file. And she goes, okay, Miss Allen, Dr. So-and-so needs to examine you and she needs to see what type of restrictions that we need to mark down. So she's going to ask you to do a few stretches or, you know, exercises. I said, okay, but she's asking me to do things that I cannot do and I'm not going to injure myself even more just so she can see if I can bend over or if I can twist from side to side. I said, she came in here a while ago and she didn't have my file. You have my file.
Right. And regardless, even if you could do some of these, like even say if you could bend over, that doesn't mean you could do it repeatedly for 8 hours a day.
Right.
So it doesn't prove anything. It's not a reasonable test.
Right.
Clearly.
So they excused themselves. And about 25 minutes later, that same lady, the office personnel lady, came back into the room where I was at. And I was having an anxiety attack. And I had already opened the door and opened up the blinds because, you know, when you have an anxiety attack, you need to change your surroundings. Somehow, some way, you need to change your surroundings. So I had opened up the door and opened up the blinds to the window because I was feeling trapped in there. And so she says, okay, Miss Allen, we're going to go ahead and release you. I said, to go back to work full duty? And she goes, no, as a patient. I said, you're releasing me as a patient. I said, why? I said, every time I come in here, all you want to do is write me prescriptions for drugs. Drugs, drugs, drugs. That's all you want to do is write me prescriptions for drugs. I said, nobody's even physically touched my back in the last 6 months.
So they're writing it off like it's just a muscle issue and not anything else.
Right. And I said, all I want to do is get my back better so I can go back to work. I said, you have no idea. This has been so stressful for me. And so I took that paper, and while I was in the office, I called my adjuster at Sedgwick, and I said, hey, the doctor just released me to go back to work, and they said that I'm automatically better now. I said, and I'm not. I need another doctor, and I need one soon, before Monday. And so he got on his little lookup thing, you know, for doctors for Sedgwick in my area. And he found me another doctor. And so that was on April the 18th. On April the 19th, the same doctor that I was supposed to see but saw this other doctor instead, you know, the one that released me, my original doctor had already ordered an MRI. So on April the 19th, I went for my MRI. On April the 20th was when I got my MRI results back, and then I found out what was wrong with my back, which was bulging and herniated disc in my neck. They called it a thoracic lumbar sprain strain in my back, bulging and herniated disc in my lower back. Now, I have underlying conditions that, of course, I did not know that I had because I've never had an MRI before. So I found out that I had spinal stenosis and Smurl's nodes. So, but that is not, my spine is not what was hurting me. It was the injury that was the pain, was the most painful. Okay, so I found another doctor, and then on April the 23rd, I went to my new doctor on that following Monday. And he immediately took me off work for a month after he read my MRI results. He immediately took me off work for a month, and he said, I don't understand why they released you. I explained to him exactly the same thing I just told you. My story has never wavered. It's the truth. He took me off work for a month. He wanted me to go to the orthopedic surgeon. He wanted me to get into physical therapy and go see a chiropractor. In between this time that the first doctor released me, I went to see the new doctor. My paperwork was sent off from Sedgwick to this third-party outsourced company, and it was to determine if I was, in fact, injured or not, called MCMC, Managing Care, Managing Cost. And what they do is they read MRIs and doctor's reports to determine if the person is in fact injured.
Interesting. So it doesn't matter what the doctor says, it matters what they say.
Evidently, because this man, the one that was reading my report, was a certified orthopedic surgeon from 1975. And here it is, 2018, if that gives you an approximate age range of him, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I'm figuring he's probably around 70-ish. He wrote in my paperwork, he had a list of every time I had been to the doctor, which was more in, let's see here, 6 months time, there were more than 40 visits to me, to the doctor, more than 40 visits in 6 months.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if there's nothing wrong with me, then why do they keep sending me to the doctor? Why do they keep sending me here and there? Okay, so he wrote in this report to Sedgwick and to Amazon and to my doctor that even though the patient has been to the doctor numerous times, I feel as though since I can't read the doctor's handwriting or notes, i.e. chicken scratch, that he's going to assume that I am faking it and that all of my payments need to stop immediately.
That is the end of part one of a three-part series I'm going to be doing with Shannon Allen. You can check out more on her YouTube channel, Shannon Allen, and you can check out more on anchor.fm, where I'm going to be posting more updates to this particular podcast, and parts two and three should be available here within the next week or so. If you would like to contribute or donate to this podcast, please do so through anchor.fm. That is the only site I am accepting donations from. If you have any other inquiries or questions to Shannon Allen or to this podcast about this topic, please visit my Facebook page on the Adam Paradox Podcast on Facebook, One Adam Paradox on Twitter. And I hope to see you there and engaging in this conversation. Workplace bullying is very real, and this is a very tragic topic. And I wish there was more we could do to kind of help educate everybody on kind of what happens in the workplace and outside of the workplace, and the lasting effects of trauma and stress and depression. And what it can lead to. And this can even lead to a recent story that was in the news about young man that tried to burn down or shoot up a mall. And it turns out he was an ex-Amazon employee. And these are real topics and real things that we can learn from and learn how to help people in this position that are going through a work environment that is not conducive to our mental health, to our physical health, and even just to our lives in general. Why do we feel that we have to hold on to this job because it feels like there's nothing else to go to? So there's going to be more material coming out on how we can deal with this and how we can improve on these situations and learn from it. And these stories are just the beginning. And it's important to get these out because we need to know we're not alone and that other people are experiencing these very extreme stories that just seem impossible to happen. And that's part of the biggest problem, I think, with workplace bullying is when it doesn't look obvious, or you know, when you're dealing with a workplace sociopath and it doesn't appear obvious that they are ruining your job and career and your life, people just don't believe you. They start assuming that it's because you're just not performing well, or that you're just not doing well at your job, or you're lazy, or whatever it is. And that's not the case. What's happening is good people with good intentions are getting ruined because there's other people that don't know what they're doing or have a hard time coping or aren't competent enough to compete. And so they wipe out the competition that they know they probably won't win to. And that is a very real and very common thing. So what I aim to do, or what we can do as a community, is educate each other. And try to figure out where these weak points lie and how we can handle them and grow and improve in our workplace. And not only that, survive it, get past it, and maybe make the fixes and corrections that need to be. But there is no job where we have to be so attached to that it starts ruining our life. And when we do that, we need to move on to the next one. Now, it's not always easy, so I get that. But what we can do is recognize when it's time to leave. There is so much more to learn, so please stay tuned for parts two and three to this podcast coming out in the next week or two. Thanks again for listening. Please show your support.